Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back for another episode of the Startup Hustle. This is your host today, Matt Watson. Today we're going to be talking about training, reskilling, upskilling employees. Like at Full Scale, we have hundreds of employees, and it's a never-ending, we'll call it opportunity, to always be training all of our employees. And today with me is Chris Gunchosh, who is the co-founder and CEO of Initial. And they have a really cool product that actually helps with that, that integrates with Pluralsight and YouTube and all sorts of different things to help bring online learning educational content together, and uses AI. So be a cool conversation today. Do want to remind everybody that today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Full Scale. Hiring software developers is difficult. Full Scale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably. Please visit fullscale.io to learn more. Chris, welcome to the show from Germany.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Matt. Thank you. Hello, everyone.
I don't think I've ever had a guest on the show from Germany before, so this is a first time.
Wow.
But you're actually from Poland, right?
Yes, originally from Poland, but living here in Germany for now over 8 years.
But I have been to Poland once. I was in Warsaw and Krakow, I think, for like a week, many years ago, like 15 years ago or something, but...
How did you like it?
My only memory is I got there. I don't remember exactly like what time of year it was, but I got there and then like the next day it snowed. And I want to say it snowed like 6 or 12 inches of snow. And all I remember is there were like thousands of people everywhere shoveling snow. And like the snow did not faze anyone. And then there were giant trucks, like giant dump trucks full of snow, like hauling all the snow out of the city. That's all I remember.
Yeah, that must have been like deep winter, right? It happens every year, though. Like not in Berlin. Berlin is more like this dark and rainy, and like it's not as pretty as in Poland. But it's a great city, though.
Well, so I'm excited to learn more about what your company does and talk more about self improvement and ongoing education and stuff like that for employees. But first, tell us a little bit about your background and what did you do before you started the company, and what was the kind of what gave you the idea to start the company?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Sounds good. Actually, so I have a background in economics, but then I was a software engineer for a couple of years. We actually opened up a software agency with a couple of friends. We grew the company to up to 40 people. And at one point, I was, let's say, more interested into looking into products and services that we could offer to engineers, to teams that we've been working with. And this was also the time when at that time I started to create kind of a spin-off from the agency. It was called MVP Space. So we were working with say, a lot of different new technologies at the time. And we had teams working with JavaScript, teams working with Python, teams working with other technologies. And what happened is that we always needed to train the teams in those different areas, supporting them pretty much on a daily basis. There were new projects coming on from our customers, and we needed to support them also with that. So there was this quick moments of upskilling where a new project came in and we were like, hey, who can actually learn about this? So we were looking around who actually has the knowledge or where we can gain this knowledge from. And this is actually where this idea of Inential initially came to life and starting to, and we started to basically work on that, or I started to work on that, looking into how we could basically support engineering teams or tech teams with better content, better approach towards learning.
I love this because you were solving your own problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? You were solving your own problem using your own expertise. Did you guys look around for other solutions? Like, so before you had this, before you built this product, how did you solve this problem before? Did you just buy Pluralsight or Udemy or something like that direct? Or how did you do this before?
So we would actually, this is actually quite interesting. So we did a couple of things. So first of all, courses like Pluralsight or Udemy. This was, by the way, around 8 years ago. So a while ago when we started to really do this. There were a couple of platforms, you know, for online courses. This was like, let's say, the first thing that we wanted to go for. But everyone wanted also a bit of a different thing, right? So you needed to like juggle around with the subscriptions and with what everyone wants what to offer. We also had this, let's say, mentoring structure where those senior engineers would actually support the junior engineers with their needs. But also we were actually encouraging the junior engineers to be mentors. So we actually created this structure where anyone could provide or create a small type of knowledge sharing session, even if they didn't necessarily know the topic very well. They could talk about the topic for 15 minutes. Maybe 10 minutes, and then train the others. And this was more like learning by teaching, let's say, which is actually very interesting because then you need to be prepared when you're actually going to do a short presentation. So this was one way. Obviously, courses was one of the main ways how we approached it.
Well, I love the fact that you were solving your own problem. You know, you saw the opportunity and decided to build something. I think it's one of the greatest ways that businesses are created. And I've told this story a few times, but like 20 years ago, I worked on some software for ticket brokers. So it was like resale of tickets for sports events and concerts and stuff like that. And the owner, you know, mailed thousands of tickets a month, a week, you know, via UPS and FedEx, DHL, stuff like that. And what he noticed is a lot of the packages weren't delivered on time, and he could get a refund if he'd go and fight the carrier to get a refund because it wasn't delivered for, you know, within 2 days or 3 days like it was supposed to be. And so we built that functionality into the other software we built. And a few years later, he took just that part of the software and spun it out into another company and started auditing shipping invoices for other companies. And that turned into a giant business he sold for like $100 million or something like that. But it's cool, like, you know, seeing those problems and being able to build a solution specific, you know, for an industry and the expertise and all the things, and then figuring out how to take it to market. I also feel like a lot of dev agencies, so it sounds like you had a dev agency, you said, with about 40 people.
Yeah.
A lot of dev agencies are always trying to build products. They like don't want to be dev agencies. They want to be product companies.
The one third, yeah.
And so tell me about that struggle for a minute.
Yeah, so for us, you know, we actually worked primarily with the public sector in Europe. So this was European Union, European Commission, European Space Agency. And this was actually more on the personal side where I was like, all right, I'm actually more made for things that are a little bit, maybe faster paced than the public sector. And I was looking into opportunities, you know, how to basically leverage what we already know and what we already have. Even actually because we've built a lot of, let's say, boilerplates and some, let's say, software that we could already use. So we had already the building blocks even for that software that we initially created. But indeed, there is loads of companies, especially dev agencies, I can see actually in Poland, that are creating spin-offs directly from their agencies and creating some interesting products, because they understand, like, you know, same here, right? Like, we literally had this problem and we literally were struggling with that. Yeah.
Well, so like at FullScale, we built our own internal system we call Rocks. And basically, it's like an employee tracking system, kind of like you could see everybody's profiles, like resumes kind of stuff. And then we built an applicant tracking system into it. So when we go to hire people, we can do all this applicant tracking stuff. And they built a time clock and they started building all these different things. But I think some of it is a byproduct of having, you know, bench time or extra resources, right? Like if you have a couple extra developers or whatever, you can give some, you give them something to do, and hopefully it becomes something valuable, you know, as a byproduct. Is that how you guys built some of this stuff, was bench time or?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in case of Financial, it was actually, we decided from the very beginning to basically turn it into a separate company. So we didn't really, let's say, use the resources that we had in the agency. Because for us, this was also a decision like, hey, should we, let's say, focus then on Financial, or should we focus on the customer projects, right? And there is, like, if you start seeing the opportunity, you can start, let's say, cannibalizing yourself. You know, that could be an issue. So we from the very beginning, we decided to split it, basically.
So do you still have that dev agency?
So the dev agency is still operating. I'm still partially, let's say, involved, but let's say not operationally myself. The agency is called VAT, and we're still here on the European market. Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Well, so tell us more about Initial and what it does. We've talked about it a little bit here, but give us the 60-second pitch.
Sure. Sounds good. So with Initial, we supporting companies primarily, I would say, within the IT space, so IT consulting, IT services companies, with upskilling, reskilling, certification. So those topics that you might need to service your customers to get more projects or to work on projects, let's say like certifications. And we actually providing so-called an AI-powered learning assistant, so that assistant can actually give you guidance of what kind of topics you can work on personally. So you can focus on your personal development as an engineer, and you can figure out what's the best thing, that's the next best thing for you. But it also can support companies on this more strategic initiatives. So let's say, exactly, like you might need certifications for, let's say, topics like AWS or Azure or others. We actually combine over 30 platforms, 30 learning providers on Initial, like Pluralsight, Udemy, Coursera, DataCamp, and others, and find you the best resources that can actually solve some of those strategic initiatives or those personal development topics. This is like let's say the long story. It's a short story of like what Initial basically does. Yeah.
Well, what I love about it is you guys you can curate across all of those, right? And then we could upload our own videos, you know. So at FullScale, this would be super useful for us because we have 300 employees, we have 200 and something software developers, and we're always, you know, trying to train them, upskill them on new things when they're between projects, or we hire some kind of entry level people sometimes fresh out of college. And we send them through a fast track, like, internship program that we do for a few months. But I love the idea of being able to use your product and creating those kind of learning plans, you know, be it like this programming language, or for us, it could be things like other communication skills or like interviewing skills or what, you know, whatever the things are. But some of it would just be internal training. Like, what does it mean to work at FullScale, and what do we do, and blah, 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 all the things. So I really love that. And tell me about, there's so much content out there from all these different sources. But one of the things you told me the other day that I thought was really valuable is you guys can also help people just find and curate free content.
Yeah, exactly, right? So there is so many different content options that you have out there. Even on Enential itself, we have over 65,000 different courses for, I think, over 1,200 skills at the moment. So anything from technical topics, can be soft skill topics like communication or other, some really specialized areas. And finding the right resources can be really, really challenging. When it comes to actually free or even paid resources, you have platforms like Udemy that is providing a lot of different kind of options. You have platforms like Pluralsight, but you also have options that are free from actually edX or YouTube or Medium or other platforms. So for us, what we do, we basically take all of this content and look really at the quality of the content. So we have a system that can actually check and validate if the content is good or not. We're using NLP and AI for that to do this initial analysis, looking at all the data that is in each actually content piece, and then only the best content that is out there lands on the initial platform, and then it's delivered based on needs. And this is also like another, let's say, big chunk to making sure that we're providing the content directly to the specific needs of the individual person or the needs of, let's say, the organization that is currently looking for, let's say, you know, let's say onboarding someone or upskilling those juniors who are just joining.
So is some of the content duplicated? So for example, does somebody upload the exact same like 30-minute video to Udemy and the Pluralsight and to potentially YouTube? And like potentially you have the exact same video that's on multiple of these sites too?
So typically, I would say that's a good question. But typically, I would say no. Normally, let's say the content is limited to this particular provider. Okay. It could be though, right? We actually don't know for sure if, let's say, the content from Udemy and YouTube, if someone, let's say the person who has uploaded content to Udemy has also uploaded it to YouTube, and our algorithm found out that it's the same, it's obviously not going to be there. But then if it's something different, maybe different description, different titles, it could end up on the platform.
Oh, just curious. So I have a friend here in Kansas City. His name is Corey House, who has created a lot of videos on Pluralsight. They're actually some of the most popular videos on Pluralsight. And I don't know how much money he makes right now from Pluralsight, but at one time, I think he was making like hundreds of thousands of dollars a year or something crazy from his videos that he made and just published on there. So it's insane. Some of these content creators can make a huge amount of money for creating super high quality content and putting them on these platforms too, which is its own interesting monetization strategy. Just like you have great content creators on YouTube that make money. There's a couple of them I follow that publish new videos every couple of days and they get like hundreds of thousands of views and stuff. So do you guys continually pull in new videos from YouTube? Like, how do you deal with that part of it? Because there's like new videos every day. And how do you figure out which ones are good and which ones to pull in?
Yeah. So for us, we have a content team that actually makes sure to look at specific publications. So for example, YouTube is a very specific case, because if we would just, let's say, pull all the content that is out there, that might be tricky. So we're actually looking at publications that we know are providing quality content. So for example, Free Code Camp has, you know, videos and other materials that we could provide, or there are other publications for, let's say, business topics or sales topics that we actually digging into, and not, let's say, like the entire YouTube library. Same, for example, for Udemy, like there, to make sure that we have a, let's say, quality content, we're also looking only at content that is rated higher than 4.2, I think, at this time. So this content that is, let's say, rated lower or actually has no ratings would not end up on Enential, because then also like we wouldn't know if it's a quality content or not.
So if I can't wait to go in there, and I want to see if there's like a whole growth plan of like watching Mr. Beast videos. is that a plan? I'm gonna try that.
could be exactly.
So what how do you guys sell your product? How do you charge for it?
Yeah, so we have let's say a normal SaaS licenses. So we sell those, let's say, packages of, let's say, 50, 100, 150 users, so to access the product. So this is pretty much depends on the size. Let's say we have this starter pack option that costs €200, $200 a month. This is what you can start with, up to 50 users. And then normally the company who is working with us would use their training budget or learning budget, so this budget that you dedicate for individual employee, to basically train, and you use those budgets to purchase individual resources. But what's interesting about us is that we don't charge you for, let's say, yearly subscriptions with Pluralsight or Udemy or others. So you only buy what you actually need from those providers for that particular period of time. And that's actually what's pretty interesting, because many times when it comes to learning, the challenge is that it's not being, let's say, courses and platforms are not being used throughout the entire year. You only use it in those particular moments when you actually need it. So let's say someone is not on a project and it's on the bench, or like it's in this in between time that we talked about, then it's the moment when probably you will jump into courses and learn more about something new, or completely change maybe your profile, because this is where you have the time.
Well, so as I mentioned before, at Full Scale, we've got 300 employees that do software development for other people, and we're always trying to train them. And we have been using Pluralsight, and it's definitely a challenge when you have 300 employees, because you're like, I don't want to buy a license for, you know, 300 of them or 200 of them if they're not all going to use it, right? Like, Pluralsight's not cheap. I don't remember, is it like $500 a year or something like that? I don't remember what the number is, but it's several hundred dollars. Yeah, it's several hundred dollars. And you really need the ability to, like, 1 month, like 30 people are going to use it, and the next month, like 50 people will use it or whatever, and kind of move it around. And that has always been one of my challenges with Pluralsight for the last like 10 plus years when I've had employees, is it's like, I don't want to buy licenses for everybody because I know not everybody's going to use it. And so I feel like one of the biggest problems that your company, your product actually solves is that, is being able to say, you know we need training for a lot of people, but different people use it different months. So you guys can help optimize that spend and that expense. So to that degree, I feel like it will pays for your product, right? Like, we're going to save money on Pluralsight, and then we can pay a few dollars for your product, and you're actually going to help us save money on Pluralsight. You kind of see that as one of your biggest benefits?
Yeah, this is definitely one of the big ones, but also the fact that you can actually access different providers. So you're not only, let's say, using Pluralsight, but some providers, let's say, for cloud are way better than Pluralsight. And some providers for, let's say, more business topics, let's say like even Udemy, is just a separate thing. So you would need to really have multiple different subscriptions to actually cover all the needs that you might have in your organizations. So that's, I think, another thing that is very, very valuable with our product.
It's also kind of dangerous. It's not dangerous, but it's also kind of dangerous from an expense perspective, right? Because you could go in and be like, hey, I need a license to Pluralsight, and I need a license to Udemy, and I need a license to Coursera, and it's like, now you spend $200 a month because you're using all these things, right? So when I say dangerous, it's just from an expense perspective. You have to be kind of careful of like, okay, we really want content probably from one of those providers. Otherwise it's like living in the US today. You got to pay for Hulu, and you got to pay for Netflix and Paramount Plus, the same. And Apple TV. It's like, we're paying for all of them all of a sudden, right? Isn't there enough shit to watch? Thing. Isn't there enough shit to watch on one of these things? Like, why do I got to pay for all of them? But it would be great if in the future, all of those different providers, instead of charging per month, would charge like per stream or viewing, or more like consumption based would be nice. Cause you're like, I just need one video from Udemy and two videos from this and whatever. But
But their business model then is not adding up for them as well, right? That's always the challenge here. So that's why I think, you know, with Udemy, this is more or less what you could do, what you can do, right? You can buy just a single course, and then you don't need to buy those yearly licenses. But still, let's say if you keep on using the platform, it might make more sense to buy it yearly. You know, what's interesting is like we see, especially with larger companies, larger customers of ours, they have used, let's say, 3 or 4 or 5 different subscriptions for LinkedIn Learning, Udemy, Pluralsight, A-Cloud Guru, some other providers. And, you know, it all adds up and they are, let's say, you know, overlapping at one point because you basically are using like LinkedIn Learning and, let's say, Udemy. Sometimes the courses might be very, very similar, but still, you know, if it's a larger organization, they already have purchased these licenses and they have, you know, 1 year or 2 years of contracts that they do. So what we're trying to do is to basically optimize this, as I mentioned, and making it accessible to everyone so that you can access all these courses, all these providers, without having to really, you know, struggle in a sense of setting up all of these different contracts and having those yearly licenses for everyone.
So your largest customer today, how many employees do you think they have that may use your platform? Do you have customers with thousands of employees?
Yeah, so I think the largest one at the moment is over 2,000 or 2,500 employees. It's a company here in Europe, Nortal, actually. They have been using us since 2 years now, and exactly, they have actually teams all over the globe and are using us for upskilling, certifications, reskilling their teams.
So, you know, at full scale, we're not at that level yet. We're at 200 something, almost 300 employees. But I can definitely appreciate the problems when you have like hundreds and thousands of employees of constantly need to reskill and upskill employees. You know, when you just have like 10 people, it's not as big of a thing. And you're like, oh, I need to teach one person about something. You don't really think much about it. It's like, yeah, you know, we'll teach this one guy this thing. But when you got hundreds of people or thousands of people like us or Nortel or whatever, it's like a never ending challenge. You're like, okay, AI came out. How do I teach everyone to use AI and what, how mm-hmm. does that affect their yeah. job? Right. So like at full scale, we've had some of our employees create our own content about using AI with different programming languages and GitHub's Copilot and ChatGPT and things like that, which is great. We, you know, it's not super high quality content. Love you guys if you're listening, but it's not super high quality content, but it's content. But it's a never ending set of challenges to train, right? And so that's where it's like, be great to use your platform of like, hey, how do we go find super high quality content, you know, on AI and ChatGPT and all that stuff that was done by like professional and, you know, kind of instructors and content creators who are super good at what they do, that we can show to our team and train them all these things. But like AI, I think, is a great example of something that just comes kind of out of nowhere that, especially for software developers, it's like, how would we use AI to like build products, improve products, right? But then how do we use AI to like write code? How do we use AI to help us do things with our job that aren't just writing code, but like soft skills or writing emails or research? Or, I mean, I use it all the time for just like, how do I do this thing with Google's API? Like I use, it's mm-hmm. like, yeah. you know, it's like the cheat code for looking at docs. Like instead of going and digging through docs, like just ask it and it like magically knows, right? Like there's so many things. And I would imagine you've had to talk to several customers that like AI has to be one of the big topics that somebody would use, you know, a product like yours.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think it's, it all comes down to the strategy that the company has, right? So let's say if, like, you know, we work with those IT services companies, and if their customers are now all of a sudden requesting anything about AI, which is actually the case, right? Like you probably also have had it in your company, Matt. It's like you have your customers talking about generative AI or other topics, and now you're like, all right, and I need to get the generative AI topic going. So what's the best way to actually do it, right? So you can, of course, record your own videos, which you can also upload to Inential and then distribute it to everyone, especially if you have a larger team, right? So you want to make sure that everyone is on it, on the topic. But you can also use existing materials, like high quality stuff that is out there, being produced regularly by content producers, those guys who are, you know, doing it professionally, and they make sure that this is a quality stuff and you're going to learn quickly. But it's really a variety of topics. We see that sometimes it could be something related to cloud. Sometimes it could be more, let's say, soft skill, power skill related topics. Like recently, we had this case with one of our customers who talked about how to quickly provide interview training for the teams that are now in between projects. So especially in IT services, you know, when you're in between projects, sometimes in some business models, you might want to have your engineers being interviewed by the customer, right? And then the customer wants to talk to the engineer. But as you know, sometimes engineers, let's say, are maybe not the most interview, let's say, the people who are more happy to do interviews and are good at it. So it's good to actually help them out a little bit, right? Like help them out with providing them some training on that. So this is one of the cases, right? Which is not really strictly technology related, but also related to topics that are relevant and not really just tech.
So changing topics a little bit, I'm curious, how do you sell your product? So as entrepreneurs, especially software developer types like us, like we can create products, we're good at creating them, having product vision, solving our own problems, just like you. But then there's this huge challenge of like, how do I actually sell this thing? And a lot of people overlook that part of it. They get enamored with the problem. They go build a product. But how do you guys sell what you do?
Yeah, I think this has been the biggest learning, I would say, on my end, because you know, coming also from the service industry first, where you know it's relatively simple, because I mean simpler, I would say it's not simple, it's simpler, where you have your service, you know, someone needs that service, you sell the service, you know, and here you know with product, it's a little bit more navigating around use cases, what people exactly want and what they need, what kind of problems are you solving. So for us recently, this is a recent thing, what has been a biggest shift is to really narrow down our niche. And so we were actually going a bit broader when it comes to tech. So now we decided, all right, we are actually going to focus only on the IT services, IT consulting, so the dev shops, because we understand those problems much better and we can target this type of customers way better. So we actually if we go to practicalities, like we do experiment with several channels. So first of all, you know, simply just outreach is one of the main channels, I would say. Email, LinkedIn, mixed calls. This is like one of the let's say bread and butter kind of channel. But we also produce a lot of or started to produce a lot of content. So content partnerships, content that we have on our blog, on our platform that we are distributing. We're seeing a lot of that is also bringing us leads. And we want to now, this is like let's say a push in that direction. But we're also experimenting a lot. So a recent thing that we introduced in our team is this experimentation mindset that is changing significantly how we think about sales, where we're running those like 2 weeks experiments of different channels or different ways how we can basically approach, and whatever hits, we basically go that direction. I would say that's the current approach. So long story short, it's tricky. It's tricky. The thing is, the trickiest part of the business to get it right.
Well, I talk about this a lot on my blog and on LinkedIn. And if you guys don't follow me on LinkedIn, just look up Matt Watson on LinkedIn. I post stuff every day. About, for me, the easiest part about business and software business a lot of times is writing the code. It's, you know, knowing what code to write is its own set of problems, and the challenge of the product and how the product should work and how to architect it. Like all of those are problems. Those are really hard problems to solve. I feel like actually writing the code is the easiest part, but the hardest part of all is the go-to-market strategy. Like, how do we sell this thing? Right. And so, you know, you kind of described how it's working for you now and some of those challenges, but I guess I'm curious, from the time that you guys started selling, like you built the product, you started selling it, did you have any of the go-to-market figured out, or it took you another year or two to kind of figure out the go-to-market, or?
Yeah. So for us, you know, when we started selling the product, we actually did this, the biggest mistake, or maybe not the biggest mistake, but the biggest learning that we've had so far when it comes to product is what kind of problem you're solving for your audience, right? So this is like, we've built a product that was based on interviews, but these interviews have not been done properly in the first place. So then we built the wrong product, you know, and we started to sell that product and we were like, okay, it's not selling. So what's happening, you know?
Yeah.
So we really needed to take a step back and trying to understand like, all right, so what's wrong? Like, what are we doing? Like trying to redo the interview process, trying to understand deeper the user, the segment, the use case. And that was kind of, let's say, unlocking it. I mean, I don't say it's completely unlocked, but slowly started to unlock for us the sales process. So I would say, you know, when we thought about, you know, the go to market, we're like, oh yeah, so like first, you know, with this idea, so like naively, like, all right, we're gonna go and just gonna sell because we know we build this based on like interviews, you know, and we know like, we know the audience.
Everybody needs this. No problem.
Everybody needs this. Yeah, exactly. But then it was like, yeah, actually, it's not what anybody needs, actually. And then we had to like completely restructure and change. And I think where we are right now, it's already like it's been, I think, 2 years or more that we've been experimenting and changing and adapting. And this is a long process. It's a good learning, though.
So originally, were you trying to sell... were you trying to originally target a different type of customer, or were you just trying to target everyone?
Yeah, so we were going after, I would say, the general tech, we said. So this is basically customers who could be startups, could be scale-ups, could be, let's say, IT services firms, could be actually tech teams in enterprises. So we went all over the place a little bit and started to narrow it down. And really, this narrowing it down is I think the most relevant thing. Like going into like one niche is very, very helpful. So even like you don't have really the brain capacity to like think about 5 different niches or 10 different niches. It's just way easier for
yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe you have the brain capacity, but there is still the team that needs to support you and like discussing it with everyone is way easier.
Well, it's like the product is probably 80% the same, right? But there's a little bit that's different. Yeah, and some of it's just the term, it's the terminology and the specific value proposition, right? Like if you're selling to a dev agency, it's easy to like speak that language and have the right messaging around that. Versus if you're also like, hey, you have thousands of manufacturing employees that you need to get certified and learn how to use equipment or whatever, like whatever the things are, that's sort of like a different, you know, value proposition. Like potentially the software does both, but, you know, going across industries and verticals like that, you have to make everything kind of more generic. But when you make things more generic, you kind of don't sell to anybody in their language, right? Like that's the hard part.
And also, you know, understanding deeper the problems that the customer has, right? So if we're going into, you know, IT consulting or, you know, dev shops, like we're trying to understand, all right, like they're selling to this type of customer. And then when they're selling to this customers, like what happens? Like, what do they really need to do? You know, so for example, we've learned like topics like certifications are very, very important for certain types of dev shops, right? Not for everyone actually, but like for certain types where they're selling to customers who actually require those certifications, or maybe they want to sell their services for premium and they say, right, you know, we're AWS certified or we're Microsoft certified. And that way we also, you know, this is only the one way how we can really deeply understand the customers is to really narrow down on that niche.
Well, I love it. And, you know, this is a reminder that this podcast is brought to you by Full Scale. And you know, I think we definitely could use your guys' product to certify our employees on all the different things, be it Azure and AWS and programming languages and all these things. And we do some of that stuff today, but I think your guys' platform would help us organize and do that in a more effective way. And so I'm definitely a fan of what you're doing. And if anybody needs to hire software developers and grow their team, please keep us in mind. We've got 300 hardworking, very talented employees that work for a lot of different people doing a lot of different things, and we can help. So Chris, what do you see as what is the future? What is the next step for your company?
Yeah, so for us, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning, we are basically a learning assistant. So we can support you pretty much as an extra team member who is working for you within this learning space that pretty much does a lot of different things. So having this integration, I mean, we already integrate with AI for topics like analyzing what kind of needs you have individually or recommending you the content. But we see in the future that really going deeper into becoming pretty much, let's say, AI-oriented company, and that learning assistant is quite relevant. We obviously, you know, trying to go for different markets. So we've been approaching Europe, but now we're also going a little bit broader and trying to see how is it in the US market for us. So that's definitely going to be an important step. Yeah, I think those are like the main things at the moment.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on our show today. Always like to end the show and ask if you have any other final words of wisdom for other entrepreneurs out there.
Yeah, I think, you know, as we were talking about it, find your niche. I think that's the most recent one from that I've learned, and that really unlocked a lot of things. So having that, you know, finding that niche, that segment that works for you, going too broad is difficult. Going a bit narrower simplifies your life, and you can actually achieve much, much more with that.
Absolutely. That's fantastic advice. Well, everybody, this was Chris Gunshosh from Inential, and his company is INNENTIAL.com from Berlin. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Matt. It was great talking to you. See you, everyone.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.